rotten person. Terrible, rotten person. I know it. I'm rotten, rotten, rotten. And George, I think... Well, I'm rotten. That's all. I'm admitting it. I'm rotten. You know, we ought to have a U.N. delegate, Walt, who does nothing. Well, we ought to have a guilt delegate, you know, that stands up there and just takes the guilt. Says, so we're rotten, 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 rotten. We did it. Rotten, rotten. I'm a terrible person. I'll tell you, it must be the weather. The weather has got my old blood flowing like a deep, rich, endless, pounding, pulsing river of SSS tonic crashing against the rocks of my soul. Is there such a thing anymore as SSS tonic? Did you ever hear about it? SSS tonic. Why is it I'm the only one who ever heard of it? My Aunt Glenn used to get a buzz on it. She would knock a jug, I'll tell you, and she was married to the bootlegger uncle, and she was a terrible temperance lady. My Aunt Glenn was a terrible temperance lady. She was one of these short ladies. I don't know, there's a special kind of girdle that certain ladies wear that starts right under their armpits and goes down to their ankles. Well, my Aunt Glenn had that kind of girdle, and you could hear her creaking in the dark for blocks before she'd come up the house. You could hear her creaking and squeaking away. And my old man used to say, you know, Glenn is so tight she squeaks. He was referring to the state of her finances. But I was always taking it literally. But my Aunt Glenn was a temperance lady. But I remember one thing about old Aunt Glenn. On Saturday night, she would get SSS tonic'd all up. She would hit that SSS tonic like, she's hitting the jug, singing and hollering and throwing it through the window and swinging on the chandeliers, and it was all because of the spring tonic. Has anyone else ever heard of that tonic? Why in the world? What is this? What kind of an America do I live in? When I look, it seems like just like 2 weeks ago. In fact, it was 2 weeks ago. Indiana town. Chicago, stand right there next to a drugstore. There's a whole window full of SSS tonic and trusses. And there was something that they used to stick false teeth on the roof of the mouth. I remember the whole window full of them. Is there anybody? Yeah, and there were these plaster ladies. Yeah. Well, is there anybody out there who remembers? Am I the only guy who knows about SSS tonic? And it's not 100 years old. It's last week. In fact, a very popular mixed drink in our drugstore would be to come in and say, Fifield, I'll have Coke and SSS. And what he would do, he'd squirt the Coke syrup in there and give you a shot of SSS. And you had three or four Cokes like that, and your old eyeballs are sweating, I'm telling you. Well, it was good for the blood. That's what they said. It was good for the blood because it's 79% alcohol. But very healthy alcohol. It had a lot of vitamins in it. Is there anybody else out there, or did I invent that? It is this kind of weather. Oh, boy, I'll tell you, it's a great day. And it's an awful thing. I don't know. You see, you can see why I'd never make it as a sick comic. You know, I can just see me get up there, and they got a green light on me, and everybody's waiting for me to give bombs about segregation and about hate and love and pow, pow, you know, hitting out and yelling about pot and all the rest of it. And I get up there, and I say, what a fantastic day, fellas. Oh, boy, what a day. Hey, 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 let's all sing together now, gang. Let's go. Come on, all together now. Come on, Fred, give us a tune on the old thing over there. Let's go, gang. It's the old springtime. The blood is flowing like... Oh, wait a minute. Wait, excuse me. Oh, hold it there. Whew, boy. Yes, I will award the Brass Figligy with bronze oak leaf palm if anyone can describe to me the label of SSS tonic just to assure me that it existed. I know that Aunt Glenn used to put it on her lettuce, put it on her salad and everything. Oh, it was why? Because it was good for the blood, you know. A lot of people believed in blood in those days. Very good for blood. Speaking of blood, I'm out for it tonight. And for any of you who are women and children, I would suggest that you go a little bit to the left on the dial. They have this wonderful Norman Luboff choir music they're playing there. It's very quiet music. While on the subject, however, of that particular problem, why is it in the springtime, Walt, my mind invariably turns to a set of terrible limericks. I'm not a limerick type. I'm just not a limerick type. But there are certain limericks that are burned right into my subconsciousness. Now, I will award the Brass Figligee, and really, with this one with an aluminum palm leaf, for any of you who can rise above the solid, rotten mire of ordinary listenership, who can give me, who remember the rest of this great limerick that started out with, "There was a young man from Azizus whose ears were of two different sizes." And, oh, I can't tell you the rest of it. There's kids and everybody here. His ears were two different sizes. There was a young man from Pittsburgh who thought that what he needed was a Buick. Oh, jeez. Oh, cut it out. Come on, fellas. You quit tickling. Did somebody remember that tonic? Really? Only one. Two tonic types. There was a young man from Azizus whose ears were of two different sizes. Oh, the rest of it is where it really starts going. The next line, it picks up steam, and the next one after that, it starts to send out sparks, and after that, I'm off the air. Oh, people are rotten, aren't they? I mean, they're really rotten. One line, I'll give you a clue for those of you who are being bugged out there. One clue is that with one of his ears, just a clue, though, as you start fitting it together. With one of his ears, he won prizes. Now, that's just a clue that, I'll just give you a clue there. You can start putting it together again. I'm torn. That's the trouble with me. I'm torn between, you know, the man is always this way. He's torn between the ethereal abstraction of beauty and the sheer rottenness of his glands. Now, which way do you go in the spring? It's a beautiful night out, really. Now, I'm torn between Japanese haiku and limericks, which are a little fuzzy and that have a tendency to squeak in the dark and once in a while snicker right out loud. And over the desert, wild and free, rides. Hold it there. Hold it now. Set up the Sheik of Araby. I think I'll sing one chorus. And before you play that, Walt, you got it all set up? Now, listen. Listen to this. Over the desert, wild and free, rides the bold Sheik of Araby. His Arab band at his command follow his love's caravan. Under the shadow of the palms, he sings to call her to his arms. While stars are fading in the dawn, over the desert they'll be gone. His captured bride, close by his side. Swift as the wind they will ride. Proudly he scorns her smile of fear. Soon he will conquer love by fear. Oh, daddy. Oh, all together now. And he sings to his love. I'm the Sheik of Araby. Oh, your love belongs to me. At night when you're asleep, into your tent I creep. The stars that shine above. Now it's gotta get very romantic. We'll light a way to love. We'll rule this land with me. I'm the Sheik of Araby. Oh, your love belongs to me. At night when you're asleep, into your tent I'll creep, creep, rick-a-tink-tink. The stars that shine above, oh, will light my way to love, love, love. You rule. Come on, all together now. Listen. Rick-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink. I'm the Sheik of Envy. All together, gang. Rick-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink. Oh, what a change. Rick-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink. Oh, it's very exciting. So long, Carl. We'll see you. Very exciting. Now, of course, I don't know whether or not. It's just a night. Don't worry about it. Tonight, for those of you who are expecting anything profound, forget it. Just forget it. I'm a human cake of Fleischmann's yeast. And a lady says, I'm an evil man. That's wonderful. That's the nicest thing, lady, that could have been said to me. And she was serious, wasn't she? Very nice, lady. It hasn't been since I left. Well, it was in seventh grade when Miss Norton told me that, only she called me an evil kid. And it's much nicer, lady, for you to call up and with all sincerity and with this fantastic, wonderful, delightful venom in your voice to say, I'm an evil man and I should be taken off the radio, right? Very good, lady. If you can get your friends to do that same thing tonight, my world would be complete. All together, Walt, let's have a few bops. Come on, let's go. I'm the sheik. Hey, did I? Wait, hold it, Walt. Hold it. What'd you want for crying out loud? Speaking of evil, this is WOR, AM and FM, New York. And Walt, you got that little thingy up in there? That thingy? There we go. Speaking of evil, here we go. Come on.
Watch your finger.
Then you'd say folks that's around here have more fun because...
They have more.
It's very exciting. I'll tell you, the life is getting more exciting. And you know, to those of you who are perhaps, and it seems incredible to believe it, that might be out there listening tonight, we really did have, and this is the first time it's happened in a long time, and I'll tell you, I feel great, a lady call up and say, I'm a truly evil man. Apparently she knows the rest of the limerick to the young man from his eyes. Well, lady, since I'm very evil, and I trust that you know what I'm evil about, we would like to have the rest of the limerick. I don't quite know. I remember almost how it went. Now, if you would tell me, I'm just singing. For a second there, it seemed to me, you know, I'll tell you a very funny thing. You're constantly being torn. Really, I'm not being funny. We are. Man is always being torn between this wild ideal of what he likes to think of himself, this beautiful creature that flies through the air with beautiful thoughts, winged thoughts, with the poetic thoughts of abstraction. Lawrence Durrell, for example, Walt. And what he really is, which is a guy who has trouble with his underwear wearing out and his socks raveling at the edges and his knee getting hurt all the time and a tendency to swear and scratch and get bitten by mosquitoes and blows his nose on his sleeve, you know. This is not quite what Durrell has in mind when Durrell pictures himself as this beautiful creature thinking beautiful thoughts about the beautiful residents of Alexandria, you know. Oh, another lady's called me up and said I'm evil. Oh, crying out loud. That one said, called me up and said I'm a beautiful person, which is a rotten thing to say to me on a night like this. But, come on now. A man calls up and says, angry? Very good. I'm glad. You're getting the angry people out there. All you have to do is mention the name Limerick, and everybody out there thinks you're being evil and dirty. What rotten minds people have. And I haven't said anything. Isn't it wild? That's lovely. You always tell when you're scoring, you know. You really do. Well, you fill in the blanks out there your own way. I'll never forget the time that I did a television show. And this was a TV show that was done in the Middle West. And we used to do some genuine, and I mean really genuine, communication on television. I really use the medium, you see, to communicate ideas. And so I'm looking out there one night, and I says, you know, the trouble with television, you know as well as I do, the trouble with radio, the trouble with television, the trouble with everything is that they don't really put the stuff on that you want to see. Isn't that true, Walt? I mean, you know, you can just see so many pictures, you know, you can just see so many shows about the inside of an emergency ward in the hospital, and pretty soon you start getting corns. In very bad places to get corns. And so you don't want to see this anymore. I mean, how many nights can you spend with Ben Casey? And how many nights can you spend riding the old range, plugging the bad guys? After a while, you begin to slowly understand that they just don't put the stuff on that you want to see. Right, folks? Right, friends? The real stuff you want to see, right? And, of course, I'm looking right out of the screen at all my wonderful friends sitting out there, my constituents, and I'm looking right at them. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, see, and I'm full frame, and I say, you know as well as I do, old buddy, that you're not seeing the stuff you want to see, right? I mean, look into your mind, look deep into your mind, and what would you like to see on television, although you know you never will? What would you like to see, although you know they would never get away with it? What would you like, just what would you want to see on television? Just to think about it. Well, there's a long pause, and then behind me, Walt, starts creeping this beautiful music. And I'm looking out and I'm saying, all right, now, friends, this is your chance. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. The women and children, the kids are all in bed. It's time now to see the stuff you really want to see on television, okay? And slowly I'm beginning to fade out. My picture, my face, my old mug is fading out. And as I fade out, around the screen comes a frame, you know, looking just like a television frame, you know, that big black frame that looks like a picture. And I'm fading out. And as I fade out, the screen gets white. It gets just absolutely white, like a blank TV screen, Walter. It gets white like a blank TV screen, and the music is playing behind me. And then my voice is saying, okay, now, swing. See the pictures that you really want to see on television. You can be creative now. Just sit there and look. Concentrate on that white screen. Concentrate. Hey, hey, Walter, whoa, whoa. Concentrate on that white screen. Just concentrate and look right deep into that old screen. Just look there deep into that screen. Yes, you can see the pictures. Oh, look at that. Oh, boy. Oh, come on, let it go. Swing. Oh, hi, George. Oh, 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 boy, I never thought you'd get... Oh, wow. Well, let me tell you what happened. There was nothing on that screen, just that old white stuff, you know. Well, the next day, I got 452 letters led by an angry letter from two elderly spinsters who said, Mr. Shepard, we are turning you in for doing this terrible stuff on... Why, that's why... Well, and here, all I was thinking of in the picture, you know what I saw in my picture? Everybody makes his own picture. And you know what I saw in my picture? This beautiful, beautiful, soft Michigan lake. A lovely Michigan lake. And you could see those dark pine trees back there. And you could see that twilight hanging down like a great big gray and blue and silver curtain. And then just as the music came up higher and higher, I could see this loon rising up from the marsh and swinging low and heavy, flopping his wings as he's taken off over that dark water. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, it's a beautiful picture of nature at its absolute finest. There it was all over the screen. My old eyes are puddling up. My old soul just a-crying out. Well, that's what I saw, madam, on my television screen. And what you saw is your own rotten fault, that's all. You come around here. Crying out loud, the people. You know, speaking, did you hear that jug band there blowing away? This reminds me of a thing. I don't think I've ever told this story. It just occurred to me. When I pulled this thing for a specific reason. It was in the spring, and it's all part and parcel of spring. You know, spring is a very dangerous time for people. Wars start in spring. Are you aware of that? Oh, boy. Guys fly out of windows in spring. Guys make decisions about their romantic life, which are irrevocable, and which forever and ever and ever will cast the whole chain of sequences, the chain of existence that will carry them to who knows what. And that's the way it is. That's the way spring is. And I remember one time, a very peculiar spring, and I was in the Army. Spring does strange things to people in the Army, like it does to people everywhere. And, you know, has it ever occurred to you just how many days, how many moments, how many instances, how many seconds, how many minutes, how many, in some cases, how many years of your life that you don't remember at all? You just don't remember it. But you really do, you know. You really do. It is there. You really do. It is there. So don't feel for a minute that you've lost any of it. You really have. It is there. It comes out in strange ways, those memories, those things that happened to you in those days that you spent. And once in a while, somebody will press a button and you'll be walking down the street and there'll be a very peculiar feeling, a strange moment. Even unstrange moments, but you are the sum of all these things, and you can't escape it. Well, here it's spring, and I remember one time, I could not even tell you, right at this moment, it's funny, the reason I mentioned the things that you forget, I couldn't tell you where the train was going. I was on a troop train. Well, troop trains go in strange ways. They go into sidings, and sometimes you'll go to a camp and you'll stay there a couple of days, and then they'll put you on another one, they'll send you someplace else. And I don't remember specifically where we were going. I do remember this, though. There is something, a very special quality about being on a troop train at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. I want to leave where they live. Oh, no. They're very, very... They'll go out on a little weekend thing, and they'll pile a lot of stuff on the top of the Morgan or on top of the MG or something, and they'll go out, and that's about it. But it's travel, no, not like in America. They don't think in terms of moving to California 3,000 miles away, which many people do continually in America. This is a very different attitude we have towards movement and what our place is in the geographical scheme of things. Well, I'm in this hotel, and I don't recall even why or where. No, it was in a hotel, and the next scene I have is being on a troop train. I was on a troop train, and it was hotter than... It's impossible to describe how hot it was, because there's something about troop trains, because usually there's too many guys in them. There's a feeling in a troop train that I've never found in any other kind of conveyance at all, even remotely. And a troop train, you've probably seen movies of them. A troop train is usually made up of, particularly the areas where they sleep in, it's made up of bunks piled up one on top of the other. Have you ever seen them, Ed? Made up these pipes. The bunks are kind of made up of pipes, and they have hammocks slung, kind of flat things, and people sleep one on top of the other, and it gets very hot. And the train was constantly going into sidings, and so nobody was asleep, and everybody was in the car, where it was like a parlor car, really. And it was hot, and there were yellow lights, and it was an ancient car. This is what I remember about it. So old, you wouldn't believe this. They had dug out all the rolling stock during the war, and this particular car was so old, and I'm telling you absolutely straight, it had stained glass windows. The windows were curved on the top, and above it, above the actual glass, was a little stained glass strip. I don't know whether you've ever seen a train like this. It was the only time I ever saw anything like this, and it had yellow and red and green stained glass flowers. Now, between each window, there was a little nozzle that came out, and on the little nozzle was a little glass globe. This had been a gas car. Yes, it was for gaslight. And this car was like 10 million years old, and they had dragged it out of some museum or something, and it was on the troop train. Well, it had very peculiar seats. The seats, because they were obviously built about the time of Lincoln's second campaign, these seats were bolt upright, and they were made out of some kind of a horse blanket material. It was the scratchiest, rottenest green mohair you ever saw in your life. It was like sitting on 5,000 English hairbrushes. And no matter what you... And the seats got hot. You know, it was really hot in this kind. It was down in the tropics. We were in the Everglades. And the train was stinking rotten hot, and they had about three little light bulbs that had been strung up in this train, absolutely a kind of jerry-built thing, where they had wired it for electricity and had a couple of little plain, ordinary, naked light bulbs hanging in the middle of it. We're sitting in this train, and we've been in this thing about 9 hours, and we are literally covered with a coating, a thick patina, or do you prefer patina, a thick shell of a combination of cinders, sweat, anger, buggedness, the army. There's a certain kind of coating you get on you just from being in the army. It's composed of a lot of stuff. I think your glands exude some kind of a very special fluid when you're under the duress of being in the army. Continue. I don't know. I've never smelled that anywhere else. It could be called elderly fatigue smell. It comes from elderly fatigues, the green fatigues. Well, so here we are. We're all in our what laughingly is called the suntans. These suntans are about 17 times heavier than the winter suits that guys wear now. You know, they're built for combat and everything else. You know, they're thick, like sailcloth. I don't know, dyed brown. So we're sitting there, and we are sweating. I wish I could tell you there's a great expression as to what we were how we were sweating. I just can't tell you, but we were sweating that way. We were just sweating. And of course, there's a certain amount of it's not hostility. It isn't even that. We're all together in this thing. So no sense. You know, hostility, I believe, only comes out when there is a sense that there is a victory possible. In other words, if a lot of guys are standing in line to get tickets at the Yankee Stadium or something, and they start yelling at each other and it's hostile, well, that's because they sense they can win. Well, in the Army, there isn't even any hostility, actually, because there is no sense of a victory. What it is that's facing you is like the great stone face that is 10 million miles high and 4 million miles wide. It's much bigger than anybody. So everyone sits there. It's like getting mad at a tornado, so forget it, you know? So we're all sitting in this car, and it's been like 7 hours. And every 5 minutes, this train goes, gung-gung-gung-gung-gung-gung-gung-gung-gung. It pulls into the jungle, literally into the jungle. We're in the Everglades, someplace in the middle of Florida. It pulls into the jungle, and ooh, yeah, wow, wow, wow. Past goes a bunch of black marketeers wearing green glasses in their air-conditioning train on their way to Miami. They go past. The gigantic Black Marketeer Sunshine Special goes whistling past, and we could see all the chicks and all the guys with their cigars. The windows are going past your window, and you're looking through your stained glass. You're looking around your gas pipe, you know, and your sweat is dripping down into your socks. And dead silence. And you look out, blackness again. And then chung, you're heading towards oblivion again, into the darkness. You're sweating. And once in a while, you can hear from about three or four seats behind you this corporal. There was always this corporal who somehow had secreted something in his musette bag, and it is now working on him. And you can hear him about three or four or five seats behind you sweating. It's hot and you're dripping. You can hear, wah! Somebody says, oh, well, somebody hit that guy in the head with a shoe. Wah! And we're sitting there. Wah! And we're, choo. And up ahead, there's two or three guys are making ribald remarks about a film which we call The Mickey Mouse. Somebody says, but the guys are going to come in here and show some. I understand there's a room and they're going to show us a Mickey Mouse. And guys are trying to sleep. Other guys, you just can't go back to your bunk. I'll tell you, going back to your bunk, it's like lying absolutely flat over a hot air register. A hot air register with halitosis. So you don't go back there. Well, of course, there's a couple of guys laying flat out there just wearing nothing but their skivvies, you know, just absolutely dripping. Just lying there, you see their feet hanging out into the aisle. They're trying to sleep. So we're sitting in there. Don't ask me where we were going. Didn't matter. We were just going. So we're sitting. Well, we arrive at about 4 o'clock in the morning. This was the crazy, insane scene. I don't know where it was. I'd like to know. I'd like to go back there to see what it's like now. But it's about 4 o'clock in the morning, and this train is just inching along through the jungle. It's like through a black tunnel. And you can see these dark trees, and these once in a while there's a little clearing, but you can't see anything. It was absolutely pitch black. Oh, another thing I must point out. Florida at that time was in an absolute blackout due to the fact that there was a great deal of fear that the Germans were landing in Florida. They were actually going to make raids on Florida. You know that they were worried about that. And right off the coast, they were sinking ships every night, and you could see the light in the sky once in a while when one of the big oilers would go up. So it was absolutely pitch black, and this train is, with its yellow light, is chugging away there. Well, everybody, you know how you get a kind of state of being drugged? You know the state, have you ever waited in bus stations for 19 hours with one foot is asleep and then the other foot is asleep and then your head is asleep and there's a hillbilly over there trying to make time with a chick and a sailor's asleep underneath the thing, you know, and the Coke machine is just making a hissing sound over in the corner and you can see the closed up cigar shop over there with the bars over it and once in a while this great big cop walks through fingering his 38. You know, that kind of thing, you just sit there and you doze off and there's a guy mopping the floor and once in a while, somebody spits tobacco on the windowsill. You know that kind of place. You know what I'm talking about? It's like 4 o'clock in the morning in the siding. Well, we're just sitting there, saying we're sort of drugged, half hour, you know, just drugged. And the train had stopped an average of every 7 minutes since it left Ennui on its way to eventual total boredomsville. And it keeps stopping. Well, we pull into this one place, and there is a little combination tar, wood, and log platform out there. It was like carved right out of the jungle, just laying there. And there's a electric light bulb hanging from a little iron bar sticking down there and a couple of little barbed wire things around there. And nothing, absolutely nothing, just this little light out there. And we were stopping. Apparently, the train was stopping for water or for lava or whatever it is this thing ran on. I don't know. We stop. You see, we pull up there. And I'm sort of half out of my skull. You know, I'm just sort of laying there with my tongue hanging out. And now the guy, this corporal, 3 or 4 seats behind me, has kind of receded into the dry heaves. All you can hear once in a while, he's half asleep. You're, oh! And there's that sound, oh! Oh! Darkness, and the light bulbs are swinging, and we're sitting there. Absolutely not a sound. When out of the darkness, believe it or not, out of the darkness, very silently, I could hear this wild sound. I'm telling you, at 4 o'clock in the morning, in the middle of the jungle, we start hearing this. I start hearing these jugs. I start hearing stuff. Oh, it was totally... totally incongruous. Completely incongruous. I cannot tell you. I'll tell you, it was as incongruous as if you were sitting in Shrafts and suddenly out of the Muzak speakers you can hear Lead Belly. And Lead Belly screaming about the chick he murdered one time in Mobile with his big fat Barlow knife. And he waddled around and laughed while she waddled around and died. I don't know how that would go over with the tomato surprise. But it would be it just totally incongruous. And you could see the guys. And I start dragging myself up. And I look out of this rotten, dirty, crummy, dust-covered, ancient window. And I see these guys underneath this yellow light bulb. There are 4 colored guys standing there at 4 o'clock in the morning. I never saw a greater sight in my life. One guy has a cigar box fiddle. This is a fiddle. I don't know whether you've ever seen a real cigar box fiddle player. This is a true American instrument. It is an instrument made out of a cigar box. It has a long neck attached to it, and on the other end of the neck, there are a couple of pegs that the guy has carved holes in, and attached to the pegs, he's got these horsehair or wire strings, usually 2 or 3, sometimes only 1. And some cases, they have made it, this guy happened to have a homemade bow. And he is fiddling like you never heard anybody fiddle. This great big fat guy out there, he's fiddling away on this homemade match, this wild-looking cigar box fiddle. Well, next to him is a tall, skinny guy wearing blue overalls. And he's beating it out on a washtub bass. And this washtub bass, I never saw a washtub bass like this. Now, I'm an old washtub bass player. But this guy had a washtub, a copper washtub. It looked like it came right out of a Confederate camp about the time of 61, I'd say, just before Manassas, I'd say. And this thing was turned upside down, Walt, and he had this great big long broomstick on the top of it. And laying right on the top next to the broomstick, he had 2 gallon cans. One can was filled half with water, and the other was filled about 3/4. What the gallon cans full of water did, I don't know. I guess gave it body. And he's out there going... He is playing the wildest bass I've heard this side, I'm telling you. Guys, you think guys like Charlie Mingus play? Let me tell you, this guy was really singing it out. And he was doing what Slam Stewart does, or did, when Slam Stewart was big. Did you ever hear of Slam Stewart playing the bass? Well, he's going... He's humming with this bass. Well, on the other side of him is a guy playing a combination banjo, and on the top of the banjo is a kazoo. He is blowing a kazoo. He's blowing a kazoo, and he's playing a banjo at the same time, and standing next to him is the biggest, fattest guy of the whole crowd, who must have been 107 years old. And he is playing the greatest B-flat jug I've ever heard in my life. He is blowing this great big fat brown jug, a big molasses jug that's about two-thirds full of corn whiskey. And he is blowing it. Listen to him blow that thing. There's a jug. This is at 4 o'clock in the morning in the middle of the jungles in Florida. Now... Of course, all the guys start, and the corporal starts heaving. Everybody starts looking out of the windows. And it really worked. I have to tell you, this is the only time in the entire Army, all my time in the Army, that I ever saw it really work. Just like, you can just imagine a picture, you know, with Robert Mitchum and Van Johnson and that crew. These guys are really blowing. And they're grinning and hollering and yelling up at the guys, and the guys are grinning and yelling and hollering down. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, and believe it or not, what these guys are playing, if I told you what they were playing, oh, it was terrible. The first thing that they're playing when we... they're playing Pass the Biscuits, Morandi. You know the song, Pass the Biscuits, Morandi. Well, they stopped that one, and then apparently these guys were going to be very... they were going to be patriotic for us. And so they start blowing Past the Ammunition. You know that one? You remember that? I have never in all my born days heard such a version of Praise the Lord and Past the Ammunition. You could not tell whether it was infinitely profane or infinitely patriotic or just infinitely wild. These guys are blowing Praise the Lord and Past the Ammunition. 17 different keys at once. They were galloping through the jungle, and all the guys started hollering and yelling. And they 19 straight choruses of Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition, and then they stopped. They're out of breath. They're gasping. Most of these guys, of course, were from New York. They were from places like Chicago. They were from Pittsburgh. They had never seen in their life a jug player. And I know that most of them had never seen a bass of that kind, a washtub bass. This is 4 o'clock in the morning. Well, this is what really was the final statement of it all. So guys start digging down in their pockets. And somebody throws a quarter out. And one of the guys picks up the quarter, the banjo player, picks up the quarter. He throws it back. He says, man, we don't want your money. We are just playing for you. And he starts playing again. They're beating it out. And we're all sitting there. Nobody knows what to say. They're beating it out. It is 4 o'clock in the morning. We can't tell whether they have come down to meet the train. We can't tell where they came from, whether they came out of the woods or what. And they're blowing and yelling and hollering, man, we ain't here for your money. We're here to play for you, man. And they start blowing Pistol Packin' Mama. They are knocking out a Pistol Packin' Mama like you never heard in your life. A quick segue, and these guys are doing the Saints. And then there's another quick segue, and they're doing Roll Out the Barrel. All wonderful Andrew Sisters hits. And they're knocking it out, and the train goes chug, 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 off into the distance. And as far as we could go, we could hear these guys. End of story. That was it. And everybody, of course, is awake. And guys are talking and hollering. And we went off into the darkness. We were heading north, as a matter of fact, into the jungle. And they played until we were out of sight. Guys are looking out of the windows, hanging out of the trains, hollering back at them. You could see that a little old yellow light bulb receding into the distance, and you could hear those guys playing for about a half a mile. Now, how about that for a story? And I'm not trying to tell you a story. This just absolutely happened exactly the way I'm telling it to you. And it was, yeah, it was a very peculiar moment in the war. A very strange moment. And so guys, you know, kind of looking around. And what really then became strange was what happened after that. There was a completely different atmosphere in the car. And I'm not going to tell you it was a good atmosphere. You see, what had happened was up to this point, we had all been resigned. Really, you get resigned. You just sort of go with it. And now there was something else that entered the picture. Everybody, I know that I did, and I know that Zinsmeister, I know the three or four other guys with me, we became almost unbelievably depressed. It was just like, I don't know, everybody was depressed. We're rolling along there, and a couple of guys are talking quietly. But now everybody really was sad. And up to this moment, nobody had thought about anything. And the next morning, we're all lined up for our powdered eggs and our big fat French toast and our SOS. And it just kept right on for about 2 days, just a quiet sad.